But however logical or illogical the connections are between Darwinism and Nazism, historically the connections are there and they cannot be wished away. Welcome to Darwin Denied, the Essential Bookshelf. What we're doing is we're going through books that we think are critical to the creation-evolution debate for those Christians who want to be well-informed about all the issues that are relevant to the debate over Darwinism. And so today, the book that I'm introducing is this one by Richard Weikart, and it's called From Darwin to Hitler. A little provocative title, From Darwin to Hitler. The subtitle is Evolutionary Ethics, Eugenics, and Racism in Germany. Now, for a number of reasons, this is a very sensitive and raw topic because of, and we're sometimes tempted to think, well, because of political correctness, but no, there's more than a century's worth of raw emotions over this. Darwin published Origin of Species in 1859, and that unsettled a bunch of people because they saw the implications of it, even though he's just talking about birds and, you know, it was a general macro theory. A bunch of people saw the implications for the human race. Mm-hmm. And Darwin didn't go into print on that until like 1871 in his publication of The Descent of Man.
Right.
And at that point, Darwin went on the record saying, what I've been saying about the evolution of various species does not exclude man.
Right.
We're part of the show. We're part of the whole. We're part of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Now, the implications of this are troubling for those who have concerns about racism, racial theories. And when you look online, if you say if you type into your search bar, was Charles Darwin a racist? You'll have some stuff come up, and some defenders of Darwin, friends of Darwin, will say, "Well, unfortunately, he was a man of his times,"
right,
that kind of thing, and so he shared some of the racial biases of his time. But the thing that people are not coming to grips with is that his theory is, I would argue, necessarily and inexorably racist.
Right.
And so it was not just an unfortunate fact that he was a Victorian Englishman who participated in certain racial bigotries. It was part and parcel with the whole, part and parcel with his whole outlook. Now, this book, From Darwin to Hitler, shows that I'll just read a quotation. In philosophical terms, Darwinism was a necessary but not a sufficient cause for Nazi ideology. But however logical or illogical the connections are between Darwinism and Nazism, historically the connections are there and they cannot be wished away. Mm. And this book is just crammed full of historical documentation showing how the Nazis were full-throated evolutionists. They embraced the whole thing, and they applied it. And they applied it with cruelty and malice, but that's what they were applying.
Right.
Weikart says that he makes a distinction between necessary and sufficient causes. If something is necessary, it means without that thing, you won't have the other thing. Mm-hmm. A sufficient cause is with this thing, you will have the other thing. So without Darwinism, you can't have Nazism. With Darwinism, you may or may not have Nazism. So,
but you can still have racism without.
Yeah, I would say Darwinism necessitates racism.
Right.
But you don't have to have a philosophy of extermination, let's say.
Right.
Right. So what happened was, and this is a lot of people have done a lot of walking back or backpedaling. And that after Darwin published Origin of the Species, a gentleman named Herbert Spencer came up with the phrase social Darwinism,
mm-hmm.
Okay, where you took you took the tenets of the biological theory and you applied it to human history, competition between nations,
right.
and so forth. So Spencer was an ardent Darwinist, and he applied the biological theory to human social interactions. And some people say, well, see, that was that's not what he should have done. That's too bad. But here's a quote from Darwin himself. This is Darwin.
The Western, is this from this, I think Descent this, of Man?
Descent of Man. The Western nations of Europe now so immeasurably surpass their former savage progenitors that they stand at the summit of civilization. The civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace the savage races through the world. So Darwin believed in evolutionary progress, and he believed that that evolutionary progress applied to mankind.
Right.
And he believed that it applied to the differentiated races or tribes among mankind.
Now, his one tree of life in his first book shows a branching tree where you have one species and populations diverging and being subject to different selection pressures. And so those two populations, which were or are one species, are starting to diverge. Now, a lot of times they diverge and they're in a different niche so right. that they can coexist.
Right.
And that's why you have it be a branching tree, not a linear tree.
Right.
So, but if those two populations that eventually reach a species status, so they're no longer one but two, and they're trying to occupy the same niche, then I could...
Then it's direct competition.
That's when it's direct competition, and that's why you'd say, you know, it's going to replace and exterminate the others. But if they're such that they're in a different, completely different niche, going after different resources, then I think his own diagram shows that it doesn't have to be an extermination thing.
Until you get to a certain population size. So
right, and then you're going to have...
Inevitable conflict.
Yeah, right.
So here's this would be the thing, it would seem to me, that if Darwin believed in progress, evolutionary progress, and he, as he did, then you've got the concept of superior, inferior, right? You could have a theory of evolution that denied progress, and the only value was, are you continuing to survive?
Right, and that's sort of the kind of Darwinism that's more today. They still say that some things can advance if there's a selection pressure, but there's no, because today they've sort of worked out the inconsistencies, they would say there's no thing that's propelling you for advancement.
Right.
That you can evolve downward, upward, whatever.
Sideways,
whatever makes it.
So instead of a
you survive, it's just survival of the fittest. And that fittest doesn't need to be more advanced. It can be, it's like a car, a race car can be more fit if you strip it of unnecessary weight. You can subtract from it and make it faster. So it's all about survival ability, not advancement.
Right.
I think in the more of the 19th century or early 20th century, it was much more of a progressive notion
right.
of Darwinism, whereas today it's like whatever works.
Right. Except that...
But, go ahead.
Well, except that mankind has to think in terms of praise and blame. And I think they've not been as successful in exterminating the idea of progress as they like to think. Because we could, on paper, it's as though they shifted from a graded class, A plus, A minus, B plus, and so forth, to simply pass-fail, right? And so the evolutionary tree is failing, is dying, and your genes not reproducing. And we could all evolve back to a planet full of cockroaches.
Yeah, or bacteria.
Or bacteria. And so long as the genes continue to perpetuate, you're passing the class. Mm-hmm. Right. If there's a nuclear war and we all mutated back to some kind of
insect. Yeah, all of the smart big things that couldn't fit into little cracks died. And so, it's all about what in the environment selects. You know, that's why it's called natural selection. Nature sort of selects which population is more fit. And so, but what's interesting about this whole today, you've got this tension. You've got back in the early days of Darwinism, there was racist implications and there was some pushback, but not anywhere near the pushback today, because you had this other movement called political correctness.
Well, it was actually it was the Nazis who
made it unpopular.
Who made eugenics before World War II. Eugenics is a
Darwin. It happened in U.S.
You know? Oh yeah,
it was happening with putting Otabenga, the African pygmy in the Bronx Zoo.
Right.
And then there was just enough of an outcry that they finally put a stop to that. But you have these things popping up, but when you see the full blown version of it in the Nazis, then
everybody recoiled.
Right.
So and they said, "Oh my gosh, that's where that goes." But now we're a good generation out from World War II. The memory is well, it's we still have veterans of that war, you know, people who remember it alive today. But the memory's fading fast, and eugenics is starting to make a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
Given the premises of the tree of life, you can breed dogs, you can breed horses,
you can breed anything.
You can breed anything for certain characteristics.
Right. You can make some dogs dumb, you can make some dogs smart,
and you can make some dogs more adaptable to survival down the road, and so and given the relative comparison of this dog is smarter, swifter, better than this dog, maybe there's because Darwinism is not necessarily relativistic in an absolute sense. Mm-hmm. You have to retreat to the comparative sense where this dog is a better retriever or this dog is a better border collie kind of
that won't fly in that won't fly very well in the political correct. So
what I'm saying that we're an animal. Why can't you breed for us?
Right.
Why can't we be bred for?
So there's going to be with this movement where you're saying that eugenics is coming back. Won't there be a big clash between that movement and political correctness, and how will you see that clash?
No, I think the politically correct people are the secularists. They're the evolutionists, and they're the ones who are going to flip. And the people who are going to stay steady are the creationists, the people who believe in God. Because the implications, basically, I think that the implications of Darwin as Weikart shows, and all the early first generation Darwinians were this way. They accepted the implications of the white races, the civilized European races were ahead of, according to their premises, were ahead of Africa.
Right.
Okay. And so we had every right to dominate, every right to colonize, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And of course, for Christians who believe that Adam and Eve were the father and mother of
all
of us,
right?
Asians, blacks, whites,
and
or actually not only Adam and Eve, but Noah and his wife were the progenitors of everybody
and of their kids everybody. And their kids' wives. And
so the Christian, the creationist, looks at a Nigerian or Chinese
as in the image of God,
as an image, not only as being in the image of God, but as my cousin,
right?
Okay, this person is my cousin. The Darwinian sees that you've got a certain number of organisms competing for limited resources. Mm-hmm. Some of them are going to be better at that competition than others. That's where Spencer's survival, Spencer's social Darwinism. And I think he came up with survival of the fittest also. You'll have this necessary implication that one developmental race of Homo sapiens could be ahead of, better right. equipped.
I mean, that's the logic. But the whole, so you'll say that the political correct movement will eventually see that they're not being consistent with their premise, and they'll eventually pack yes. up and capitulate to the inexorable logic of Darwinism.
Of Darwinism, because Darwinism basically requires us to say that comparatively, on the race yeah. for resources, one group can be ahead of the other group.
Exactly, and there's no trait that is immune to selection. So we're fine, at least with animals, we can say, okay, every trait, there's nothing that's off the board for selection, whether it's mm-hmm. skin color, fur color, hair color, eye color, body shape. All of those things are, from a Darwinian perspective, are moldable by natural selection, including intelligence. That's not off the board. But as soon as you get to humans, everybody starts getting nervous.
All of a sudden we say, yeah, we get nervous and we say, okay, now.
Why is it so flexible with all these other creatures and plants?
Right.
But you cannot make those
Yeah, so you have the inferences. You have the evolutionary tree of life growing, spreading, and one branch going up further and further. And then all of a sudden we get to humans. And someone issues a decree, okay, from now on, all humans must progress at the same rate.
They right, and no matter how much it branches, no one branch can get
right.
more
uppity. Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of immediately sort of the human rights and all of those things. And so you've got these two different
But there is no God. There are no human rights.
That's exactly. And so eventually those types of sensibilities, which are sensibilities that are coming from some kind of Judeo-Christian
background,
will either win out. But you, in order for those to win out, you have to embrace the foundation of it, which yeah. is God in heaven.
Endowed by their creator. With certain inalienable rights.
But as soon as there's no creator, then all bets are off. Things can diverge, speciate, adaptive radiation, and whether it's animals, plants, humans, there's
no standard by which we can condemn or praise right. or blame anything. George Bernard Shaw was a friend of G.K. Chesterton's and a debating partner with Chesterton, and I think mm-hmm. Chesterton did a wonderful job in opposing this eugenics thing before the war. Mm-hmm. And George Bernard Shaw was into eugenics. He was really, right. before the Nazis discredited it. Mm-hmm. And a woman one time wrote to George Bernard Shaw and said that we should get together, we should hook up on a eugenics basis. And the child could have your brains and my looks. And Shaw wrote back and said, "We can't risk it, ma'am, because it might have your brains and my looks."
Yeah, that's hilarious.
But the point is that if we're an animal, if we're simply an animal, and if we're just so many pounds of meat, bones, and protoplasm,
right,
and we have genetic characteristics that can be bred, which mm-hmm. we do. You have your grandfather's nose. You have your mother's eyes. Then why wouldn't we undertake an attempt to control
right.
our evolution? If we understand evolution, if we understand how this works, why does it give everybody the creeps to turn this over to the scientists?
Right.
But
even if we're not trying to take the helm, mm-hmm. on trying to steer one group of people in one direction and the other. Just from a natural selection standpoint, the nature taking the helm, whether it's artificial selection and eugenics. You know, we do eugenics with dogs
mm-hmm.
and eugenics with crops because we're picking certain races.
We're taking dominion.
Yeah. But with the humans, whether it's artificial selection, eugenics, or natural selection, where the environment dictates whether it's better for this population of humans to be more clever than that population, you know, those types of things, those traits that can actually be controlled by selection, for some reason, like we said, are not considered fair game when it comes to humans, unless you think that eventually they will get consistent with
now,
the idea.
Now, suppose here's another way of looking at it, because I know that we're going to get, if this is shown to an evolutionist, he's going to say, this is not outrageous slander. Nobody is saying. Nobody today, no reputable scientist today is using evolution as a basis for racial
theories. You're going back to an old version of Darwinism that's not relevant today.
So I would say, all right, this would be my reply to that. Let's say you had a scientist who, a respected scientist, who was overtly a racist, and he was appealing to Darwin. Mm-hmm. Let's say he agreed with us, but he on the racial implications, but didn't agree with us on the creationist side, right? So he was attempting to be a 19th century Darwinian in the 21st century, and let's say that he was ostracized and vilified by all the respectable PC affected Darwinians. Okay, and they were disputing his facts and disputing his research and disputing everything. I would say, look, this guy has postulated that whites are superior to blacks. Let's say, on an evolutionary basis, there is no God. It's strictly science. Mm-hmm. And I understand that you reject what he's claiming,
right?
As a matter of fact, but I want to ask you. Is what he's claiming, is that something that could be true?
Right. Well, that's actually happened. James Watson, the co-discoverer of DNA, of Nobel, Nobel Prize.
No slouch. No scientific slouch. Right.
He has made some comments about race. Just what you said.
Right.
Whites being superior to blacks. He was asked to retract. He made a public apology, but then other comments later on showed that he was still hasn't changed his in his brains. He still thinks that. And so he's been stripped. James Watson has been stripped of his some honorary degree, Chancellor Emeritus, Oliver R. Grace Professor Emeritus, Honorary Trustee. These were stripped from him because he wasn't backing down. He hasn't repented of those
implications,
those ideas. But like you said, based on Darwinian true Darwinism, whatever modern permutation of Darwinism, could he be
right? Yeah.
From that perspective, and you know, it seems like in every other animal, intelligence can be selected for or against. So why the double standard? Mm-hmm. And whether or not I'm not weighing in on James Watson's what his sources were, why he
what's he what he's what pointing
is
at,
because he's not saying that this is just his philosophical implications of his theory. He's saying no, this is what and so I'm not pointing to whether his sources are accurate. The main thing is he's just thinking. He's just thinking through his premise that even if his sources are dubious, it's one of those implications that should be
yeah, this is a philosophical issue, not a research issue.
Right.
So we could say, okay, Watson's research was bogus. Let's say he cooked
that he went to sources that were just not.
Yeah, or he made them up or whatever. Yeah. Let's say Watson could be entirely discredited as a scientist, but I would still say to his critic, what about what he's saying is impossible?
Yeah.
Right? Given your premise. Given your shared premise with him, why are you saying that that is an unacceptable outcome? We won't let the science ever go there.
Right.
Right? And I would say, yeah, you shouldn't let the science go there because we're created in the image of God.
God.
Right?
So,
But that's a separate question.
Given their premise, his point, they shouldn't have any particular issue with.
Circling back around to this book, From Darwin to Hitler, it's a intellectual history. So it's not a book analyzing the science or analyzing the research, although he does cover some of the.
So it's a sociological.
Historical study of who said what when. Mm-hmm. And it traces the impact of Darwin in Germany. So Darwin was embraced full tilt. Yay, hooray, this is going to liberate us from the restrictions of Christianity,
right.
in effect, which it did. And so this is not saying, this is not an ad hominem, I should hasten to add, this is not an ad hominem attack on Darwin saying that Darwin was a Nazi.
Right.
Right. I have no doubt that Darwin, being given his education background and his demeanor and his personality, and
he was a Victorian Englishman, and he loved his family.
If you showed him the Holocaust, I have no doubt that Darwin would be appalled.
Right.
Right. But no one little raindrop thinks that it's responsible for the flood.
Right.
Right. And what Weikart shows is that ideas have consequences.
Right. His idea breached a dam. Right.
Idea breached a dam, and it was a devastating idea. And if those of us who are entering this brave new world of genetic engineering, lab babies, all the messing around that people are doing by scientists who continue to deny the image of God and man. We live in an abortion culture. We live in an experiment on the kids in the lab culture. We live in fertilization culture where we fertilize a number of eggs and then give the parents two and wash the others down the sink.
They usually just keep them in the freezer. But anything goes if you don't have absolute morality.
Right. So this is a book to scare you. This is a book that will curl your hair. This is a book that will pin your ears back, and it will show you. It will demonstrate, I think, in a compelling way, why and how this debate over Darwin is not indoor entertainment.
Right. It's not just an intellectual, racquetball.
Yeah. There are high stakes. There are millions of people dead because
of the implications.
Because of the implications.
The ramifications of the theory.
Exactly.
Your chances of surviving the first day of the Normandy Beach invasion are radically, radically superior to your chances of surviving spiritually your time at college. Approximately 70% of those students who were engaged in church activity in high school have ceased being engaged in church activity by the end of their freshman year in college. Colleges spending ridiculous amounts of money on accoutrements for their campus that make it more like a spa resort experience than an actual academic experience. And so you can float the lazy river while you're living off of your student loans, and you see how little that has to do with the actual classroom. When the federal government starts to say, okay, here's what your bathroom needs to look like, here's how the showers have to work, here's the diversity training that everybody has to go through, and you get all of this regulation that starts to come out, you'll find the colleges are going to hop to pretty quickly to do what they need to do in order to keep that money coming. Is your priority, well, I need to be employable, I need to have this job? Or is your priority, I need to glorify God, to think critically, and to argue with this person in a persuasive way and engage them and glorify God in a way where I'm acting with integrity? If your whole goal in life is to get a job, you're a cog in somebody else's machine. You do what is necessary to keep your job on paper while preserving a quiet little space in your heart where you allow yourself to remember the difference between boys and girls. And this is the compromise that Christians are making again and again.